Hello, you're tuned in to 168 FM and you're listening to the Adrian and Joe Show, the podcast discussing issues related to business analysts, architecture change, and whatever else seems like a good idea as we go on with these episodes. If you've heard the show before, you'll know the deal. But for anybody tuning in for the first time, let me give you the 101 of what happens. Our aim is for this podcast to be raw, to be authentic, and unpolished. And to add a little jeopardy, we're time boxed at 24 minutes. Literally time boxed. A bell has been set to ring at the end of 24 minutes, and when we hit that point, that's your lot. We like to think it keeps us on our toes. But if you'd like to know more about the significance of the 24-minute duration, please do go back and listen to episode 0 in this series. And as always, I'm joined by my good friend and co-host, the indomitable Adrian Reed.
Well, good evening or morning or afternoon, depending on what time you happen to be listening.
That's very precise of you, Adrian. That's a great trait for a business analyst to have, precision.
Yes, I like to cover all angles.
Yes, indeed. And actually, there's a lot of discussion in the community over what makes a good BA. It's an ongoing conversation. People are always looking to see what skills, knowledge, abilities they need. And I think equally, we look at what makes a bad BA. So I'm super excited about who we got on the show this week, Adrian.
Absolutely. I'm really pleased to say that today we're joined by Christina Lovelock. Tina is a BA leader, author, speaker, and coach. She is Business Analysis and Solution Architecture Manager at the University of Leeds, a regular international speaker on topics relating to business analysis, a regular blogger and contributor to BA Times. She co-authored the 2019 book, Delivering Business Analysis, the BA Service Handbook, which is well worth reading if you haven't read it already. So Tina, welcome and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Adrian and Joe, for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, me too. It's great to have you here, Tina.
Thank you.
So, Tina, lately you've been championing the cause for soft or softer skills. And I think we'd all agree that these are an absolute must-have for all BAs. But in your opinion, why should we be giving more attention to these fundamental core skills over, say, knowledge, analytical or technical skills?
Mm. That's really interesting. And I think the difference here comes down to being able to do business analysis, which are the hard skills, which comes down really more to the soft skills, or what I prefer to say call core skills. And I call them core skills because I think they are so fundamental to the role. When you're first in a BA role, you're very preoccupied with how to do business analysis, learning BPMN and how to facilitate workshops. And we don't talk enough to new BAs about what it means to be a successful business analyst and how that looks.
That's really interesting. When you were speaking there, Tina, I was sort of thinking like almost like a knowing doing gap, that you can know all the theory, but actually you can know how to apply the theory, but then all of a sudden you turn up to a workshop planning to use perfect BPMN and nobody's used BPMN before and they're all angry and they're all at risk of redundancy. And that's a very different environment to be in, isn't it, I guess?
Is. And if you think about what turns a good BA into a great BA, it's not more detailed knowledge of process mapping, of UML, of different types of tools and techniques. What turns a good BA into a great BA is their core skills, their ability to build relationships and rapport and build trust with their customers and stakeholders.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you've moved away from the term soft skills. And I increasingly see people doing that, actually. And I've heard some people refer to it as interpersonal skills or core skills. I think that as you've used is even better than that. Do you think, I mean, this is probably a bit of a loaded question. It's really bad for a BA to ask. But do you think like calling them soft skills somehow demeans them?
I definitely think it devalues that group of skills. And I think it makes them sound like an optional, nice to have, something that's on top of the basic set of skills that we're looking for a BA. I think calling them something like communication skills or core skills puts them much more at the heart of the BA role. And I think for all professions, actually, calling them core skills really demonstrates the value and the fundamental nature of those types of skills.
Mm. Yeah, I think you've really hit it on the money there, Tina. I mean, you mentioned earlier about knowing these methods versus one's ability to communicate with people. And I know, Adrian, as well, you've mentioned before, I think you called it the illusion of following processes, thinking that they're going to work. And so often we see heroes on projects, right? You know, it's the people who pull things through when it's not going so well. So absolutely, these soft or these core skills are at the center, I think, of facilitating the change that we facilitate.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that, as a profession, we need to become more consistent at, because you mentioned at the beginning, Joe, what makes a good BA and what makes a bad BA. There's some quite common traits, bad behaviour traits, that sometimes BAs display. And there's things that we all know about, like being overly pedantic, moaning that we don't have enough influence, being negative. And those things, they're getting business analysis, that's becoming the reputation of business analysis. And I think we need to be really careful about protecting our reputation as a profession.
Yeah, I agree. And I think really a key phrase here that I'm hearing come through is that attitude sort of trumps the aptitude, really. And it's interesting you mentioned these pitfalls. I mean, as a profession, I feel like most people are proud of their soft skills, their chameleon-esque ability when working with people. And I mean, as much as we all like to think we're at the top of our game, I mean, chances are we're not getting 100 things right. And there is bound to be this blind side that you mentioned. Are these pitfalls, these traps that you see BAs fall into, could you share some more of those with us?
So there's quite a few different traps that I've identified. I did some work a couple of years ago to identify 8 bad behaviour types. And they're things like, as I've mentioned, being pedantic, but also behaviours like saying, I told you so, using project risk registers as a bit of an I told you so log. Maverick BAs, the ones who won't use the standards or the templates, don't offer up things for peer review, won't help with the development of business practices. That's quite a common trait amongst BAs. Sometimes a bit of us and them culture, so BAs versus PMs, for example, is quite a common trait that materialises. And I mentioned around being negative, something that I have seen increasingly is BAs using restraining language on projects. So BAs are the ones saying, can we just hang on a minute? Can we take a step back? And our projects don't want to hear that. They want to hear that we are as committed to moving the project forward as they are. And that restraining language, although done for the best reasons, can sometimes come across as quite negative.
It can. I can identify with many of those traits that you talked about now. And as I listen to them, I mean, some of them, some people might listening, it's the strengths and weaknesses debate, that a weakness can be a strength and a strength can be a weakness, depending on the balance and where the tipping point is. But are some of those, perhaps, like being pedantic, not a positive sometimes? I'm thinking, like, you know, if one's describing a business rule, you need to be fairly specific about that. And the business might say, well, you're being pedantic. But on the flip side, actually, I'm not.
I think it comes down to the word that you used earlier, Joe, which was attitude. I think you can have a positive and professional attention to detail that would not be perceived as pedantic. So it's still using that trait and that way of acting, that appropriate attention to detail, but not doing it in a way that other stakeholders are not going to react well to, or that's going to be perceived as negative.
It's really interesting. And another thing I was thinking as you and Joe were talking, Tina, was it seems to me that it's a lot down to context as well, where actually there are times when detail is necessary and there are stakeholders who will actually care about that detail. So, you know, I mean, as an example, I've spent a lot of time in financial services, and there would be actuaries and underwriters that could talk in finite detail about certain things that other stakeholders just wouldn't care about. Yeah. So do you think there's an element of sort of making sure that we are aware of the context and whilst we're putting a positive spin on things, actually understanding our stakeholders' needs in all of this sort of puzzle that we juggle as well.
Absolutely, and understanding what you've been asked to do as well. So if you review something and you only pick up on grammatical and spelling errors, is that adding value? Is that what the person who asked you was looking for from you? So really clarifying those expectations. You know, maybe the person fully intended to run a spell check, and therefore your effort was wasted and you've actually made somebody feel bad as a result. Perhaps you could have given more value-adding feedback had those expectations been clarified.
Definitely. And it does feel like, and every one of those bad behaviours you mentioned resonated. I can think of times when I've seen that and I'll put my hand up, probably have engaged in some of those, if I'm completely honest.
I was tempted to shout bingo.
Yeah, I think so. So it feels like there's a lot of trapdoors that we could fall into. And as you said, Tina, for the best of intentions, but none of them are particularly helpful at all. And it seems that they're only going to get in the way of progress for us as BAs and for the project or initiative or whatever that we're pursuing. So how would you say that those bad BA behaviours affect our overall success in working with stakeholders and actually delivering change?
Well, I think they can lead to BAs being cut out. Stakeholders not understanding the value of the BA role because BAs that they've encountered have displayed so many of these bad behaviours that is now the association of that stakeholder of what the BA role is all about. So it can shut us out as a profession. As individuals, it can cause people to go around us or not include us at an early enough stage. And these are all things that BAs raise as challenges in their role. And it's really easy to blame our behaviours on the situations that we find ourselves in and the actions of others. It's really important to remember that our behaviours are actually a choice and we've got a lot more control over our behaviours than we usually think that we do.
Yeah, I think we do. And one of the things I'm thinking here is, I mean, we've talked about process and standards on many of the episodes and the fact that following them isn't always the best thing to do. And I think that fell under your maverick category as well, about somebody who doesn't necessarily use the templates and things. But I mean, they are there for good reason, but I think one gets value through the techniques that they use. By using the right technique at the right time, you almost activate your stakeholders' participation. You get them involved in a positive way, and that can only breed good BA habits, I would think.
Absolutely. And sometimes mavericks, I think, are motivated by fear. So the reason that they don't use the templates or follow the standards set down by a business analysis team is because they're thinking, well, I'm just going to use the same old things that I already know how to use. I'm not confident using that particular tool or technique, so I'm just going to pretend that I like to do this or that this is somehow better for my stakeholders. And they'll say things like, oh, my stakeholders won't understand that. And
okay.
That's the standards before they've even tried.
That's really interesting. It sounds like almost like an abdication of responsibility. It's like the whole, well, I'm not going to be responsible for learning this. I'm comfortable with my normal way. So I'm just going to continue, you know, keeping going, which makes it almost a doubly poisonous behaviour, doesn't it?
It does. And something I've been thinking about a lot recently is the concept of the growth mindset as it relates to business analysis. And staying curious, being interested, wanting to develop yourself and expand your toolkit. Those are all things that I think really at the heart come down to the growth mindset, and cultivating that mindset amongst the BA community, I think, is really important.
It is really important, and that possibly is the biggest difference, I think, between a good BA and a bad BA. I mean, if one is curious and wishes to grow, the opposite of that is pretty much somebody who sits behind a desk filling out a template for the sake of filling out the template. And if there are two projects, one run each like that, then it's obvious which one's going to be the more successful project.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So we've talked about some bad behaviors. I mean, knowing them and what they are is one step, but we need to personally do something about it. Do you have any sort of frameworks or advice so people can retrospect to identify whether these are things that they do or where their strengths are?
Definitely. And I think you're right that recognising these behaviours and knowing that they are common traps that we can fall into as BAs is a really positive first step, because it allows us to call out that behaviour in a not personal way by recognising amongst a team that these are common things, common ways of thinking that BAs can fall into, and pointing out to each other, you've fallen into that trap, it's you today, it could be me tomorrow, but let's try and keep ourselves on track here. I think that's a really important.
So some team accountability.
Definitely. And so related to that, I think being open to feedback, and that in some cases actually means seeking feedback. I speak to a lot of people that have never actually asked anyone in their life for feedback.
Yeah.
And that really surprises me. In some ways it's surprising me, but in some ways not.
No, I think 360 reviews is quite a common way of people assessing things these days. And often that starts with somebody extending a message to somebody else to saying, can you tell me how I'm doing? Mm. And you've got to be brave to do that. I mean, it's hard to do. We ask and then we dread about what feedback's going to come back. And I think as BAs, I'm not sure if it's one of your bad behaviours, but perfectionist tendencies. As it is something that I see around me a lot, and if that feedback comes back and it doesn't say we're perfect, then I think people cringe.
It can be crushing. It can absolutely be crushing. But I think on the flip side, we're also reluctant to drill down on positive feedback. So someone will say to us, that was a great workshop, and we'll just say, oh, thank you, instead of trying to learn from what they're telling us there by saying, what did you find most useful? What aspects did you enjoy? And trying to really pinpoint what has been great for someone. That's as much of a learning point as someone giving you a piece of developmental feedback.
That's really interesting, Tina, because I'd never really thought of it like that before. And then sort of springboarding from that, perhaps part of the issue is we don't always recognise feedback as being feedback. Because when Joe was talking about 360 degree feedback, I was sort of in the back of my mind having a slightly cynical view that quite often 360 degree feedback is that thing you do at the end of the year and it's also often a little bit, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine, because we all know we've got appraisals happening and you know what's written down is going to affect those appraisals, and that's a form of feedback, but arguably, like, a stakeholder actively avoiding a workshop is also a piece of feedback, and a stakeholder looking bored is feedback, and those micro elements of feedback, if we could build them into our feedback system, that would be an awesome way of getting a more more immediate response.
Yeah, and I think that we can all do that without waiting to be told or waiting for permission. We can all, identify those opportunities that you've just mentioned. But what we can also do is start giving more feedback, because studies show that people who offer feedback tend to then attract it, because people understand that it is a kind of a two-way conversation. So if I was to say to you, Adrian, that was a great workshop, I really enjoyed it because this, or this is the thing that I found really useful, next time that you and I encounter each other, you'd be more likely to be able to do something, give me a piece of specific feedback, either positive or developmental, because that conversation has already started between us.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, there's a story running in our heads, and depending on if we get back to attitude, but you're either running a positive story in your head about how good something went, or you're potentially running some negative story in your head going, I really mucked that up. Mm. And often, our own perspectives can be, off cue. So unless we ask people, we pretty much leave it into fate's hands, I think.
We do, but I think we can perform self-reflection in a bit more of a structured way. Self-reflection sounds a bit like a airy-fairy, hippie kind of activity where you just kind of sit quietly for a while. But actually, self-reflection can be take much more of a structured approach. You can think about different aspects of your life. So thinking about perhaps outputs that you're creating. Well, how am I ensuring the quality of those outputs? How do my outputs compare to the quality that other people are producing? Give yourself a really structured approach and not just kind of leave it completely open to how do I think I'm doing, but really focus on specific areas and identify specific improvements. And I think another area where we can really think about our behaviours is by identifying role models, thinking about, well, what is it that I like about that person?
Nice.
How they responded to that situation, and what can I learn and where can I adopt that?
That's a wonderful narrative, yeah.
It's really interesting. As you were talking there, Tina, I was also thinking about journaling, which is something I sporadically do, but always find it beneficial when I do. And I found, I mean, just for me, I know everyone's different, but for me, the key to journaling is to write little, not to not write very much, but just write a few sentences at the end of the day about what went well, what didn't go well, what did I take away from it. Mm-hmm. And funny enough, I'm studying, as you know, Tina and Joe, I'm studying towards an MSc, in the final stages of an MSc at the moment. And I'm keeping a research diary, which is more detailed, but I'm finding that really useful because you're having to think, nothing went to plan because nothing ever does, but here's what I learned from that. And maybe professional journaling as BAs should become a thing.
I think that's really interesting because in project management, there's a PRINCE2 deliverable around the project manager's log, which I've never really actually seen any project managers doing. But perhaps we need something similar, a BA log, a kind of daily diary for BAs. I think that would be some interesting information.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So we've probably got time for one final quick question. So, I mean, this is all really interesting stuff, Tina, and clearly we've got to take personal responsibility for as practitioners to remedy this. But in addition to that, what can organisations do to better support BAs with this shift?
So some of the things that we talked about can be done at a personal level, it can be done at a team level or an organisation level. So creating a good culture around feedback, talking about behaviours, talking about things like emotional intelligence and how that impacts project delivery and the work that we do are so important. And making sure that organisations allow people to feel that they can talk about these things and that how you do the job is as important as what you do and what you produce.
Fantastic.
I think, that's some really good advice. We've covered quite a bit of ground in these. We're approaching 24 minutes. If people want to learn more about this stuff, where can they go? Is there anything they can click to find out more?
So as Adrian mentioned, I've done a couple of articles for BA Times, Retrospect Yourself and When BAs Go Bad, which would be a good place to start.
One of which was like almost the most read one in 2019, wasn't it, Tina?
It was really well received. It was great.
Top of the pops.
Yeah. We should continue because we haven't finished.
We will continue. Yes, yeah. Carry on, Tina. So we've got BA Times.
There's also a couple of books about feedback that I really like. So one's called Thanks for the Feedback, and another one is called Radical Candor. So those, if you're interested in feedback and growing your personal approach to feedback, those two books are somewhere that I would definitely start.
Okay, and Radical Candor. I do like the sound of that book, I must say. Well, that's fantastic. Just really to say thank you for your time now, Tina, but also if people want to stay in touch with you, is there LinkedIn, is there Twitter, is there Instagram? What are your social choices?
I'm on LinkedIn and very happy to connect with people who are interested in hearing more about these type of topics.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, the only thing left for us to say is a massive thank you, Tina. Such an interesting topic, and I'm sure we could yarn on for hours about this, but very, very relevant topic. So thank you very much. And also a massive thank you to everyone else who's listening in. And we'll catch you all in a future podcast.
Cheers. See you next time.
Thanks so much.